Welcome to Twisted Plot Podcast. Here is your host, Evelyn Marley.
All right, everybody. Today, my guest is entrepreneur, mentor, author, founder, and CEO of Hour of Champions, a lifestyle and coaching company that crafts bespoke programs and services aimed at helping clients achieve their personal and professional aspirations. Steve's journey is a testament to his experience in trading, finance, security, and entrepreneurship, and his passion for sharing his knowledge and wisdom is not only commendable, but very inspiring. So we're thrilled to have you here today, Steve, to talk a little bit about what we had discussed before, which is a judgment. But first, I want to get into just how you got into your entrepreneurship and what you do for the folks over there at Hour of Champions.
First of all, thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor, honestly. The first time we met a year or so ago, I kind of felt the energy, and
me too.
I wasn't gonna let this slip by. FYI.
So, excellent.
I appreciate that. Tell me where you'd like me to start. There was a little bit wrapped up in there, so I'm happy to start anywhere you want.
I think specifically what I'd love to know, because I have a lot of listeners who are really into personal development and just kind of crafting a life for themselves that goes beyond the norm of the just day to day. They really are looking for those nuggets to help motivate them, get them inspired, and not stay stuck in what you always talk about is really the story, right? The story of what we tell ourselves. And so I'm just curious, is how did you get started? And like, what plot twisted you into really doing the work for yourself and getting yourself to the place where you want to give that to other people?
Ooh, great question. I love that. Well, as we discussed before you hit record, very briefly, it's all about the story. And I've been curious as to my journey for forever. You know, I'm in my seventh decade of life. I believe when you're in your 60s, you're in your seventh decade of life. I kind of rewound several years ago. I wanted to go back and explore my story and find out like how I really became molded and who was influential in my journey. So I went deep back in time and I remembered my first actual entrepreneurial experience. And that was borrowing a dollar from my dad when I was like 8 years old and riding a mile through the town of Skokie, Illinois, where I grew up. There was actually 1 mile with no stoplights. So if you were 8 years old, your parents let you get on your bike and ride because you didn't have to cross a busy street. And I went to a store and I bought 98 pieces of penny candy at the time. And the reason I bought 98 instead of 100 is because tax was 2 cents. And I had a paper bag. I rode back to my house. I put the 98 pieces of candy out on the picnic table in my garage that I had dragged in from my backyard, from my parents' backyard. And I sold the candy for 2 cents a piece to the kids who were not yet allowed to ride that, what I coined the profitable mile. And I doubled my money like in a half hour.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that's interesting. And I went back and I bought twice as much candy and did it again. And I remember I paid my dad back the dollar that night. And I remember him getting on the phone with my uncle saying, you're not going to believe it. This kid figured out a way to like double his money in, one morning. And I don't know if he'll ever be able to do that again. Mm. And I have never been able to double it again that quick, to tell you the truth. But from that point on, I started like, look, I had rewound back to the original, entrepreneurial endeavor. And then I started like looking for places in time where I recreated that. And I was able to do it like through shoveling snow in the winter. And then shortly after that, I actually went to work in a small little restaurant in Chicago. We call them hot dog stands because Chicago's famous for hot dogs. And I quickly learned that I did not like working for other people because I was an employee. And after 2 weeks, it didn't work for me. I kind of guess at that point I discovered I was an entrepreneur and wound up going away to school in Arizona and then taking something that my dad had told me. As a young boy, my dad grew up in a very poor household. And after school, he would go to this place called Maxwell Street, which was like an open air flea market back in the 1940s. And he would wear watches up and down his arms and sell them to help supplement the family income. And when I got to Arizona State, I found a flea market. And I was telling my college roommate about what my dad did. And I said, I think we can do this here. Mm. And I called up my dad. He wound up sending me some watches and just did it. Just did the same exact thing. Not quite up and down my arms, but off the hood of my car at a flea market, and built a business. And I was kind of off to the races after that. That's been my journey. I kind of worked for myself. And I love the freedom of that. And certainly there's no guarantees. You know, there's a lot of ups and downs in entrepreneurship, as there are in life. But that's been my journey.
Excellent.
Yeah, early on until right now, as a matter of fact.
So your dad would wear the watches on his arm.
Yep.
And he'd go and people would see them and just be like, wow, I really like that watch. And they would want to purchase it from him. Is that what I'm getting? Pretty much.
Yeah, it was a little more clever than that. So there was an area on the east side of Chicago called Maxwell Street. Mm-hmm. And it was really something that evolved when immigrants came from all over Europe to Chicago. They came there to peddle their goods, whether mm-hmm. it be textiles or shoes, or in my dad's case, watches, clothing, groceries, you name it. Every single day, people would go and set up shop there. And my grandfather had a fruit stand there. And my dad, through the tutelage of his uncles, got into the jewelry end of it. But he would literally walk up to people and like tug on their coat and go, hey, want to buy a watch?
Check it out.
He would show them the different watches that he had, and he would sell it. And then at the end of the day, they would come home and he would take the money out and they'd put it in a cookie jar, literally, and accumulate it to buy food or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever else was necessary at the time. It was just at 12 years old, helping to supplement the family.
A long income. Line of entrepreneurship for you, basically.
A long line of entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Yep. Excellent. Yep. Excellent. My father is an entrepreneur himself. He came to this country, you know, when he was 30 years old, $20 in his pocket, and he had multiple gas stations. He was in the restaurant business. So he came from Greece and he really just wanted to make something of himself. So I can see that that's definitely the American dream, right? As they say, to come over here and just build a business for themselves and what they can do. So I love that the entrepreneurship gene is strong in you and you were able to do something right away with that candy gig you had going.
Well, I'm sure you must be very proud of your dad when you heard that story. It takes a lot of courage. It really does. When we think about it, you know, the startup part, the uncertainty, there's no clock that you punch from 8 to 4. It's you do whatever it kind of takes thing. And that is true entrepreneurship.
Truly. I think what really stood out to me about his story was having to leave his family, right? Having to, and he didn't have to, actually. That's the wrong word, I would say. He wanted to go to build something for his family there, to bring something back to them. But there was a lot of judgment, right? There was a lot of judgment. And that's something that you and I had talked about a little bit, about what it means to understand where judgment comes from. And I think this would be a great time to talk about judgment and what it means to us and how it's affected you on your journey in entrepreneurship and building your business. And just tell me a little bit about how judgment has been a part of your life and what you've learned from accepting what healthy judgment is, maybe, or negative judgment.
Sure. And I know that you and I had talked about this in previous conversations, but I frequently use the line, what I resist most is always the key to my freedom or success. And I never even thought about judgment. It was kind of a lot of people, I should say this, not a lot of people, people spend time trying to figure out what to do to make themselves better all the time. I'm kind of the opposite. I'm looking at what's keeping myself, like what the block might be, and you know, that's keeping the light from coming in. And this came about during a spiritual journey about 10 years ago. And I started getting messages indirectly from maybe my kids or my wife or family members about judgment, about me being judgmental, not only of other people, but brutally judgmental of myself, and just never being satisfied. Like, no matter how I achieved something, it just wasn't good enough. And I didn't want to accept that. It kept flashing to me like neon lights that that might be something that was keeping the light from entering. And then mysteriously, one day I got a book delivered to me, and it was Judgment Detox by Gabby Bernstein, Gabrielle Bernstein. For people who don't know who she is, she's a wonderful spiritual guru. I'm sure that you're familiar with her work. And I had watched a lot of her stuff on YouTube early on in the mornings when I'm doing my, when I'm crafting my Hour of Champions routine. And I became very familiar with her, and I was familiar with her book, but I didn't order it. Mm. And I, to this day, I don't know who delivered that message for me.
Really?
Somebody ordered the book and sent it to me. It was like, you need this, Steve. Mm. And I have a suspicion, but I never asked. And I read the book, and things just started opening up to me. And I'm like, wow, this could be something that's this. She could be right. I'm resisting this. I'm resisting all these messages and blocks, and she could be right. So that happened. And then I know that when we had a conversation a few weeks ago, I told you about a spiritual weekend that my wife and I participated in, and how a message was delivered to me during that weekend about me perhaps judging my wife's journey because I wanted it to be on the same wavelength as my journey. And that's not the way things work. And when that hit me, it really opened my eyes. And I mean, like judgment just kept flashing in. And now I'm so cognizant of it that it's like any given time, if something is not working out, the first thing I go to is there judgment going on here in some way, shape, or form, whether it's a business partner or a colleague or a relative. And when I opened myself up to the fact that it was something that I was resisting, it became a big part of, or a big solution in my world of letting light and energy into my world.
Mm-hmm. I think what was interesting was, especially about the key part about you going on your experience to the retreat with your wife, because I believe that a lot of the times we can go through the journey of healing and self-discovery, self-awareness, and maybe our partner isn't going along that same journey at that same time. Or maybe they have a different idea of what that means. And so I think for anybody out there who might be like, that's me, I'm going on this journey of self-discovery, my partner's not there with me, or how do I get them to kind of align? Would you say that that's right there in itself, judgment, or some way that we could be resisting what just should be and what is?
It's certainly, yes, it is certainly judgment when, you know, the question becomes, why aren't they on the same journey with me? And it's because it's, the answer is simple. It's because it's their journey, not our journey.
Yeah.
And I think that real freedom comes when you, when we understand that and we can let go. And again, my wife and I went on this weekend, and she kept saying, I'm doing it for you. I'm doing it for you. And I kept saying, do it for us, do it for us. And it was like the universe was sending me messages. It's not for us. It's for you. Mm. And she's being like super kind and loving, just coming with because she wants it for you. So don't judge her for not having the same anticipation or love for what was, a, you know, what was coming as I did. It was for me.
Yeah, which is so beautiful. It reminds me a lot of the five languages of love. You know how they say acts of service, quality time, touch, and there's so many. There's the other ones I can't think of off the top of my head, but that seems like a real quality time that she was giving to just be with you. And maybe that was fulfilling something for her, just being there in there with you at that space and showing up and spending the time with you there. Was she resentful at all when she was there, or was she just there kind of, you know, I'm going to do this for you and be there and be in the moment?
I think it was the latter. I don't think she was resentful at all. As a matter of fact, we have such a beautiful relationship that, you know, when I decompressed and got home, I reminded myself how lucky I was that I had, you know, a partner, a wife that would, you know, that wanted to do it for me.
Yeah.
And what happened was halfway through the weekend, I discovered after I got the message that I was being judgmental because I wanted her to be on the same spiritual wave as me, that she was super happy about being in Santa Fe, New Mexico, but really didn't want to be at a spiritual retreat. Mm-hmm. And she asked me if I minded if I just participated in the rest of the weekend, and she went and explored Santa Fe. My wife's friend was there with her, who had been on this retreat numerous times. They got to spend time together and explore the city and take walks and talk and get to know each other better. And I spent the rest of the time at the spiritual conference, and it worked out just beautifully.
That sounds like a win-win to me. It sounds like everybody came to play and have a good time and enjoy what they take what they wanted out of it, right?
Yeah, I had to surrender to the fact that I was being judgmental.
Yeah.
And I really did on the walk that evening when I questioned my wife about why she wasn't on the same wavelength as me. And she gave me a very profound answer that woke me up. And again, you know, that neon light of what I resist most is the key to my freedom. Just don't be judgmental and everything's going to flow beautifully. And it did. It did.
Beautiful. How do you use this practice of recognizing judgment and resentment in when you help others, when you're mentoring others, when you're helping guide them through what you do in your business?
Yeah, well, another great question. Well, you know, the first thing I do is I establish the fact in my world that what I resist most is typically the key to my freedom. And when I do that, I could see their jaw drop, going, uh-oh, that might be what's going on for me also. And then the question becomes, how do I sever that resistance? And it's really to surrender. So when something isn't going right, I have a deflector, and the deflector is judgment. Could it be judgment, right? And I stop, I pause, I think about that. And if it is, I admit it, right? I blatantly just admit it. I'm being judgmental. And I know that if I hand the key over, you know, that it's going to create freedom. So I tell that story, and then it's for them, it becomes as simple as repeating what Steve does if they're open to it, mm-hmm. you know. But the first thing you have to do is you have to be like open to the fact that it could be judgment, right? Mm-hmm. Establish that. And I think when people understand the difference between light and darkness, and that there's some wall there that's not letting the light in, and that it could be judgment. And if it is, and it works, all of a sudden in our world, mine and your world anyways, that light is allowed in, and all of a sudden things become brighter and the journey becomes much smoother. So mm-hmm. I do it through a story, I guess, is the short answer. And I allow them to be open to bringing that into their story as well.
This is a great segue into the storytelling. And what, you know, you set me up for that one, because I would love to hear a little bit about how you use that and what you talk to people with the story and recognizing their story and how they can influence their own story.
Again, I love this because this is, I've studied this for years, right? My original background is as a trader. And traders look at charts, they look at patterns. And I started diagramming the pattern of my life, very much the way a trader would look at it, the ups and downs, ups and downs, ups and downs. And when you look at the chart of like a stock, if you looked at Apple, the company Apple, since its inception, it didn't go from zero to 400 overnight. The journey took years of ups and downs and ups and downs. It goes from zero to 40, down to 20, up to 72, down to 38. If you can imagine the graph of a stock, it's not linear, but it kind of does this up and down journey, and so does life. Life goes up and down and up and down through a series of events, the story of your life, if you will. And when life goes down and things are feeling very low, it's much like a market. When a market stops going down, there's a level and it's called support. And it could be mathematical, it could be geopolitical, it could be emotional. And I started looking at my life and going, oh my God, my life works the exact same way as the market. Every time life goes down by some event, it could be somebody getting ill, it could be the loss of a client, whatever it is, you know, that makes you sad, things start going down and all of a sudden you find a level of support. And it could be in faith, it could be in belief, it could be in a relationship, and then it starts going up. And then all of a sudden it reaches this ceiling where it doesn't go any higher. And in the market, we call that resistance. Mm-hmm. And life has resistance too. It could be your ego. It could be emotion. It could be mathematical again, or geopolitical, whatever it is. And then things start going down. So that whole journey of up and down in trading, we call that noise. And what makes the great traders great is they learn to compartmentalize and understand that along the journey, there's going to be a lot of noise. And I started realizing that that's precisely what the Stoics do or did also. They learned how to manage noise because life gets very noisy along the way, very unpredictable. Your phone could ring in 12 seconds with a phone call that you don't want to get, God forbid. Or it could ring in 12 seconds with a phone call that can change your life.
Yeah.
Also, right?
Truly.
So I became a stickler for understanding my story and then sharing with my clients along the way. One of the first exercises that we do is rewind all the way back and look at the things in life that did work and try to repeat those. Look at the things that didn't work and try to avoid those along the way as we continue to write our story up until the end. And the beautiful thing about the whole journey is we don't get to see the script.
Right.
You know, we have no idea what's coming. That, you know, despite how much we want to be in control, when we really understand the journey, in my world anyways, and I'm pretty sure in yours, we surrender to the fact that we're not in control. So
absolutely. I mean, that's a big one.
Yeah, I think our story is a wonderful navigational system for our life. And I encourage people, step number one, I think you read about this in my book briefly, to know your story and understand your story. And it becomes incredibly useful.
Going through your book, which, by the way, is amazing, a quick little read, but so impactful, especially given what you do. And some of it sounded a little bit familiar when I was reading it and listening to your story about, you know, the flea market. So I'm curious about your inspiration for this book. And just, did you use this as a way for others to kind of see how your story can impact and how you can shift your belief in your story and not being this, you know, the victim mentality, but really owning your story and empowering yourself with your story?
Yeah, well, it's multifold, actually. One of the things I wanted to do is I wanted to give a shout out to my dad, my grandfather, my great uncles, and family members who were really influential in my upbringing. So the characters in the book are all family members. The people that know me very well and recognize the names know that. Most people don't, but my dad is actually the young boy in the pawn shop. And he is being mentored by his uncle, who's my great uncle, who really helped mold me into the young man and entrepreneur that I had become and became along the way. And then I identified several principles that I thought were imperative for not only success in life, but success and entrepreneurship, and I weave them into the chapters of the book. So each chapter, from Know Your Story to Surround Yourself with Success, Draw the Line. One of the most important is called Give the Gift.
I was going to say, could you share the gift, the gift with us? Can you give us a little sneak peek into that?
So in 2009, I was going through, a business that I was a partner in had become the victim of the credit crisis, and it was a casualty of the credit crisis. And it was a very, very tough time in my life for me. And I had, had some dealings with my own father that were kind of buried and were eating me up alive. And I wound up becoming friends with a Catholic priest at the time. And I'm Jewish, which is ironic. But the Catholic priest was my dad's rabbi's best friend. They had done a lot of interfaith marriages together. And he was introduced to me by my younger brother, who said, I want you to meet this man. I think he's just an amazing, amazing guy. And he may be able to help you out along this tumultuous time and throughout our journey. And I mentioned to him that I was having this conflict with my dad, and I didn't know how to deliver this message to him about things in life and in our business. And he said to me, oh, you need to give him the gift. And I said, what's that? And he said, it's a method for delivering a message with love and kindness so that the person that you deliver it to cannot get confrontational with you, no matter what. And he said, you need to take that stress and anxiety and everything else that has been eating you up, and you need to wrap it up with a bow and hand it to your dad with a smile on your face and say, here, it's yours now. I've been living with this for a long time and I'm kind of done with it. So here, you take it. And it became so powerful through the book and through my coaching practice that I have clients, friends, relatives that will spontaneously call me up out of nowhere and say, I gave the gift to my sister today, or I gifted my business partner today. And when I started hearing that, I knew that they had really absorbed it. And I started looking at the reviews on Amazon of the book, and almost every single one mentioned the chapter, Give the Gift. And I knew I was onto something there. So it was like a wonderful, you know, learning opportunity that was delivered to me through the universe, through a guy that never dreamt I would have met. And it's been a big part of my journey ever since, whenever conflict arises.
Wow. That's okay. So you have to walk us through this, right? Somebody, because I want real world application for anybody listening to this to go out. Now, they are talking to someone, a family member, maybe it's their Thanksgiving's coming up, right? We could talk about going to a family event, right? And maybe there's somebody they know they're going to see, and there's just some tension already, but there's some judgments already brewing for them. There's some stuff that's coming up. How would they go in there and give the gift? Is this something that they say to them, or do they just, you know, think it in their mind, tell them going in? What are the steps into giving the gift?
Sure. Well, conceptually, right, it's delivering a message. So because I deliver messages the best way through a story, I'm going to answer it in a story.
Excellent.
So several years ago, I had business partners that, I should back up one second. I also like the phrase, you either train people or they train you. Mm-hmm. So I had some business partners that trained me to be the person that did the work while they were off working kind of half days, playing a lot of golf. And I was absorbing all the work. So it wasn't their fault. It was actually my fault because I allowed it to happen. Mm. Right. So it got to the point where it was eating me up so bad, that I came in one day and there were other events that were going on. There was a gift that needed to be given. And I thought, how am I going to do this with love and kindness? So I walked into my first business partner's office and I sat down and I looked at my watch and I said, in 30 seconds, tell me everything about me you don't like. Mm. And he said to me, "Oh my God, I couldn't do that. You're one of my best friends. And, you know, I would hurt your feelings and I wouldn't feel right." And I looked at my watch and I said, "Well, in 20 seconds, I'm going to go first." And he said, "What?" And I said, "Well, now it's 14 seconds. I'm going to go first. So you can either go first or I'm going to go first." Mm. And he just sat back like this. And I walked up, I shut the door, I sat down, and I went first. And I just kind of delivered a message with love that I had been allowing him to run my life. I ate the way he wanted me to eat. I worked out the way he wanted me to work out. I responded to every phone call. And I just said, "I've had enough. I'm going to live my life instead of your life. So here is the stress and anxiety, and you take it. And now you can go and tell me everything about me that bothers you." And he did. And it was one of the most cleansing half hours I've ever had in my life. And we are great, great close friends still today. But it was really something that needed to be brought to the surface. And I think when I delivered it with love and kindness instead of confrontation, not confrontational at all, just saying, "You know what? This is what I've allowed to happen. I'm not going to allow it anymore. I've been living your life. I'm going to start living my life. You want me to respond at X time? I'm going to respond when I have the time to respond." No confrontation at all. He delivered it the same exact way. I must have set the tone. That's interesting how that happens. And we've been on the same wavelength ever since. And anytime something arises that would get us to that part of the journey again, we quickly give the gift to each other. And I've been the recipient of the gift many times. I'm only human, you know, so, and I thank people for giving me the gift as well.
It's powerful to hear the truth of what people are experiencing in the moment. And I believe that it really helps people cultivate stronger relationships and more collaboration and more communicative relationships, especially if it's coming from a place of love and understanding and not confrontation, like you said.
Yeah. And that's tough to do. You know, guys like to be confrontational and women like to be confrontational as well. You know, I know that. You specifically asked like how somebody would identify that. And there's never been a time where I've done like a talk or a keynote of some sort. And I ask the room if there's anybody in the audience that has somebody in their life that is causing them some sort of stress or anxiety. If they do, will you please raise your hand? And about 100% of the hands go up every single time.
Sure. Absolutely.
I like to say that 90% of the people tell the truth and the other 10% lie.
Yeah. Or maybe subconsciously they don't know. They're not thinking about it because they're not in the moment or being. But I'm sure that it's something that we don't know until it hits us on the side of the head. And we're, oh, there it is. Recognizing the resistance.
And it's a beautiful, it's just a beautiful way out, right? Yeah. But to have that as part of your toolbox. And just, again, it's the same thing with like the judgment. When that arises, going, "Oh my God, I need to give him the gift."
Yeah.
You know? Yep.
Give him the gift. I love it. I'm going to use it because I know coming from my old habits and my old patterns that you're talking, the noise that would happen in my life, I was definitely in a people-pleasing pattern. And I found myself not coming to terms with what I was accepting and what I could be expressing in how I could get to where I needed to go with this person or have conversations that allowed for them to maybe talk to me about what they were experiencing. And after I shifted that, it was like a whole new ballgame. But it's difficult at first because there is a lot, I think we think that there's at stake. And there's some fear behind having those conversations and thinking, I could lose this person in my life, or maybe they won't want to be friends, or maybe they won't want to talk to me. And so it's really accepting that showing up for yourself is really important as well, and it could shift into something more meaningful.
Yeah, one of my great coaches, and I've had several, reminds me frequently that family members, best friends, colleagues, everybody has a shelf life. So, you know.
Yep, that's true.
Yep.
If
we can't get on the same page, then we got to let go. And it's very difficult for me as well. But
absolutely. That's one of those parts of life, I believe.
The right? up and down, the yeah. noise.
Yep. Excellent. Well, thank you so much thank for sharing you. That. I do have some quick fire rapid questions that I'd love to ask you just to hear about, you know, what inspired you and influenced you and what you're into these days, if you don't mind me asking.
Please.
All right. So how do you recharge your battery? You've gone through a judgment spiral and now you come out of it, you recognize it, you're a little tired from it. So how do you recharge your battery?
I love that question also. The same coach reminded me several times that rest is a weapon in life.
And, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and when I'm not rested, I'm resisting, right? And what I resist most is the key to my freedom. So I quickly know that I need some sort of rest. And rest doesn't have to be sleep. It just needs to be checking out from what I would normally do every day. So my wife and I are Arizona people. We pick up, we go to Arizona, we hike. We chill out and just relax. And sometimes for me, it's asking her for a half hour for me to be alone, get into a lounge chair perhaps, and just stare at the sun. And I can see the red coming through. Mm. And it's almost like a Tesla plugging their yeah. recharge in. You know, that vitamin D for some reason allows me to recharge and rest my mind. And yeah, again, rest is an amazing weapon, you know, and that's why, you know, in war, you know, that no, despite its ongoing, they, soldiers need to find a way to rest, whether it's for 20 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is, you know, to recalibrate. So
absolutely. And yeah. What would you say is one of your favorite books? Something that you can't, like, you recommend it to everybody that you speak to, besides your own, of course, besides your own. But what's another one that you recommend others kind of go to if they're new to this self-awareness, self-understanding?
There's a book that I just finished recently. My favorite book of all time is Exodus, and that is the journey of the Jewish people after World War II to Israel. It's an amazing book, whether you're Jewish or not. It's it's one of the greatest books ever written by Leon Uris, and I've probably read it four times. My most recent book is called it's called The Last Arrow, and the kind of the premise behind it is to keep pulling arrows out of the quiver and don't leave any in there at the end of the journey. Mm. Like live life to its fullest and fire that last arrow. I don't want to give that one away, but it was an amazing book that I just finished.
Excellent.
As well.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you so much for that recommendation.
Sure.
What's your favorite podcast? Which, by the way, you do have a podcast yourself, which I got to mention it because you give some great quick bites of tips. You also have some interviews on there, but I highly recommend anybody go listen to it. It's called The Hour of Champions. Is that correct?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Our Thanks Champions podcast. So besides your own podcast, which other ones do you recommend others listen to?
I do like the Lewis Howes, The School of Greatness podcast. I mean, truth be told, I've probably written to him 1,000 times and said, you should have me on your show, like enough with the famous people. I've got a pretty interesting story as well. I don't think I've ever heard back, but there have been many stories on that podcast that have been like parallel to my journey. And it's one of the things that I do every morning is I find a podcast and put it into my phone while I'm working out. So that I'm listening or learning along the way. But I've found plenty on his podcast. Very powerful, very well done, The School of Greatness.
I always find it fascinating when people tell me what they have in their headphones when they're working out, whether or not it's a podcast or whether it's music, because you know, people take in information so differently. And so you're a podcast worker outer. You like to listen to podcasts when you work out typically?
Or if there's something that interests me, I find it on YouTube. Because I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I look for things that interest me that I want to learn about. And if there's something on a newer podcast, then I'll program that in my phone. If there's something that I just have curiosity about that I want to learn about, I will copy and paste it and put it in my phone and listen to it while I'm working out. And that way I'm getting physically fit, spiritually fit, mentally fit all at the same time.
Excellent. Excellent. What's the best piece of advice anyone's ever given you? You said a couple on here already from mentors. Which would you say has stood out to you? the most?
Best piece of advice unequivocally that I've ever gotten is pretend.
Pretend.
Yes. Pretend. We were in 2002. Myself and a young team of entrepreneurs were reorganizing a business, a failing business that we inherited. And I came off a career as a commodity trader, and I was going to be in the lending business. I had never made a loan in my life. I was sitting at the train station on a Friday evening with my new COO, and I looked at him and I said, come Monday, we're relaunching this company. I've never made a loan in my life. And he looked at me and he said, pretend. When you come in on Monday morning, be the best loan guy that ever lived.
Wow. And I mean, that's like fake it till you make it, right? A little bit.
It is fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
It is. And I remind, he's a very, very dear friend of mine to this day. And I remind him of that all the time. There's never been a better piece of advice I've gotten in life or in business than to pretend.
Whew. I think that goes for anybody who's suffering with imposter syndrome, going into anything that they are new to. Pretend. Yep. Pretend like you're the best at what you've done and just go for it. So
just go for it.
Yep. Excellent. Well, please tell the audience where they can find you on social media or if they want to reach out to you directly.
Yeah, thank you. You can find me at Hour of Champions, not the Hour of Champions, but hourofchampions.com is my website. You can feel free to join my Facebook community of several thousand people that are from all over the world that are sharing stories and helping each other at Hour of Champions Facebook group. If you just ask for an invite, I will let anybody in that has the curiosity and, you know, and wants to join and participate and share anything about themselves or answer any questions with anybody around the world. And of course, you just mentioned Hour of Champions podcast. It's on Spotify and Apple. As I learn more about how to promote that someday, I'm very good at recording. I'm not very good at promoting yet, but I'm a work in progress like everybody else.
So. That's it. That's it. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Steve. You are a wealth of information and just your story is great. I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there, anyone getting started, anyone dealing with judgment, they'll find this really valuable. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's awesome.
Thank you for joining us. Tune in next time, and remember, stay twisted.